nervous?
No.
Where's your answer?
Dennis Beckham, that's the ball on! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham!
Oh, no! Oh, yes! He missed it!
Welcome to the Suffering from Joy podcast. My name's Devin. Pure chaos! Dogs and cats living together. I don't remember the rest of the line from Ghostbusters, but a classic chaos game. Everything I've ever wanted from MLS. CONCACAF, just no tactics zone for like half the game, if not more. And a 101st minute winner. The king is back. Austin 4, San Jose 3. Wild game. Just action-packed, end-to-end entertainment, even if it wasn't the finest product on the field. Joining me today to discuss this is back from his sleep-filled adventures in Bridgeview, Illinois. Seth, who knows everything. Seth, how you feeling?
You know what? I am much warmer and much drier. And yeah, it's comfortable here right now. So, and we're on one games in a row. Like, we haven't done this since June of last year. This is weird. I don't know what this feels like.
Yeah, it's new, but I don't know if I hate it.
Yeah.
Also joining us is Charles Peacock of the False Nine, Texas. Charles, how you feeling?
You know, the sun is shining. The birds are singing. Austin won. United got a result today. Things are good.
Yeah, as a United fan, you've sort of been on the win, lose, or draw all aspects of the late game stuff the past week or so. We don't have Brad today. He tried to go to Whataburger after the game last night and got sucked into a wormhole and is now in an alternate dimension. Either that or he's off doing laundry project stuff, which is probably the real answer. Please make sure to donate and help out there if you can, time or goods. Also go make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SufferingPod. We'll put some laundry project stuff up there that's kind of easier for you to find than anything I duck into the show notes. But did you guys catch your breath from last night already? I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked between the Liverpool United game and that game. My stress levels on my Aura Ring are not in a great place, but like that's okay. That's part of this life.
Yeah, well, I mean, a little bit of stress is good for you. Get your heart rate up, burn some calories.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have the unnecessarily high heart rate thing go off on my watch yesterday, so you know, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. I'm curious, Devin, from your non-supporter section seats last night, was the people who subleased my season tickets said that when Dreese scored, it was the loudest they had heard in the stadium. And does that rank up there with like Salt Lake playoff game for you in terms of how loud the stadium was last night when he hit that winner, or had so many people left at that point that it wasn't really that crazy?
No, I mean, it was loud, and it's definitely the loudest it's been in a while, but it's not even close to the loudest I've heard that place. I'm not even sure it hits top five for me.
Yeah.
Charles, how about you from your vantage point? Any super loud comparisons, or was it like, yeah, it was loud, but it wasn't, you know, oh my God, I've never heard this place rock like this type of thing?
I mean, it was very loud down in the supporter section. I think just like the energy of the second half was so much that it kind of had a perpetual just like loudness of just the fans being so into it. Like it's just different when one, Austin scoring so many goals in a row, and two, when they're doing it in front of the south end.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we also had sort of like a lot of out of town or not regulars kind of at the game. I saw a bunch of people that aren't, you know, my section's mostly season tickets and sometimes they get sold, but saw a lot of kind of new faces. I can usually tell from like how people are walking around the concourse if they've been to a game before. And there was a lot of like confusion and pointing and people not knowing how to kind of like navigate the incredibly easy and well laid out stadium. But
well, yeah, probably a lot of Eclipse tourists.
Yeah, that was my thought.
Yeah. And it's like, and you guys are good. Like we're in like up here in Chicago, I think it's 94% Eclipse territory tomorrow, but like, it's actually going to be, it's raining today, but it's actually going to be clear tomorrow where you guys are getting what, thunderstorms for the Eclipse.
Yeah. I mean, they're going back and forth on whether it's going to be actually during Eclipse time or what, but we'll see. I'm going to spend the day at I think it's a wedding venue in the middle of nowhere in Burnett, Texas.
Good luck.
So yeah, good luck, right? so we'll see how that goes. But More rare than a total solar eclipse is Austin FC beating San Jose, unfortunately. I thought that was a great way to get our first ever win over them. Charles, you want to give us some quick kind of overall thoughts on the game?
I mean, so one of the interesting things is that the Austin FC comms team tweets out a lot of like random stats after games. Usually it's a lot of like, this is the first or most or blah, blah, blah. And like, there were so many after that match, it just goes to show how bonkers it was. It also just kind of fit both teams in a really weird way in the sense that like San Jose usually scores first in their matches and Austin's a second half team because we've only scored one goal in the first half all season. You know, it was good to see just the team have enough confidence and will to just keep going to get goals, even after going down 2-0 and easily could have been down 3 or 4. But no, it was the usual San Jose craziness, and I love it. Like, I'm sure at some point, like, they played normal matches, but they never do that against us.
No, and I mean, we talk about it on here all the time, too. Like, if we're going to be bad, can we just be, like, complete insanity bad, like San Jose?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was insanity bad. Like, if every match was, like, crazy bonkers 4-3-3-2 like that, like, everybody would be like, yeah, we suck, but we're entertaining. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you. I remember in our first season, we had that 5-3 loss to Frisco at home, and I took, like, 6 friends for the first time to that match. And they were all talking about how much fun they had, and I was like, this was torturous.
Weren't we like 5-1 at some point in that game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, well, they're like, well, there were goals being scored. People were loud. They were cheering. Yeah, the other team scored more goals. But like, to the casual Austinian, more goals is a good thing, even if they're not necessarily being scored by Austin FC.
Yeah, it's not horseshoe. It's not passing back to Stuver. It's something different, at least, right? Yes. And different is exciting. So I did go back, and I thought this was a little interesting. Seth, I'm sure you had a better broadcast view than we did. And I was trying to look at some of the VAR calls because, you know, in the stands, yeah, you can't always tell. And they did this thing where they do like a picture-in-picture and show the ref and, yes, like a little tiny square at the top of the screen. And, you know, he's looking at the monitor and then the rest of the screen is just black.
Yeah, it was very weird. Like, I just thought that that part of the broadcast was just not poor. It was funny because I think that that announcing crew was probably one of the best announcing crews that we've had since the Apple TV transition. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the graphics were like, what was going on there? I mean, the audio was coming across crystal clear. And we'll probably get to this later in the podcast, but probably a little too crystal clear at certain points. But yeah. It was definitely an interesting setup there. I mean, I do think they got both goals in the first half that were taken away by VAR. I do think those were both done correctly. I'm back and forth on the penalty that wasn't given. I think, like, at a certain point, the defender probably made his arm slightly larger, but they didn't do the picture-in-picture. They did that on the first half, one of the first half ones, but not on the second half ones, which was interesting.
Yeah, I just thought it was a little strange that, you know, I understand, like, you're trying to show the guy looking at the monitor, and I got it a little bit more when we didn't have the, like, normal refs that they were trying to, like, kind of cover for it a little bit. But, like, why would you just make the entire screen dark, like, just full screen the guy looking at the monitor if you're gonna do that?
Just a guy in a control truck pressing the wrong button.
Like, yeah, I don't,
like, as someone who, I don't know if either of you guys have ever done a broadcast of a game on the technical side, but, like, I haven't done it since college and did it with, like, a 2-camera setup. So it was very simple compared to what the Apple TV setups are today. But, like, yeah, if you press the wrong button, you press the wrong button, and it's a live broadcast. Stuff happens.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I didn't watch any of the other games yesterday. So I don't know if this is something that's happening league-wide.
Okay, it looks like it happened on the 2 I tried to look at when I got home. So maybe it was just like he hit the wrong button twice, or who knows.
I don't know if this was on. I mean, no, I watched like 5 minutes of Seattle Montreal last night, but honestly, I didn't feel like watching that one game and end up being a blowout. So yeah, got to give MLS a big round of applause. They put on 12 matches at 6:30 or 7:30 yesterday.
Yeah, I don't. They continue to just amaze and astound with incompetence.
Yeah. Then they're going to go put on the one match today in an early time slot to go compete against 2 EPL matches that are going on and compete against the Women's College Basketball National title. It's going to have like 20 plus million people, including myself, watching.
Yeah, and two, you know, relatively well-supported EPL teams, too.
Yeah.
Sheffield.
Yes, my boy. Yeah.
All right. Since you kind of mentioned it, let's kind of talk about the VAR reviews, I guess, in isolation. Charles, any thoughts on, you know, if you've been able to see him back, anything like that? Because I think we had three, right? Where we had the potential handball and then the two goals called back.
Yes.
I haven't seen the replay of the handball, which definitely looked like a handball live. I was surprised that the ref allowed the advantage on O'Brien's disallowed goal to play because it seemed like a clear foul. And to the point that I was sitting there and I was kind of like, is that something that MLS allows us to review? Because, I mean, VAR is always different, I feel like. And so I was kind of worried for a second of like, is this actually going to get reviewed?
Yeah, I had kind of a different view on that. Like, you watch the play and you're like, yeah, it's probably a foul. But if the live ref sees that and decides it's not a foul, unless there's some part of that he really, really didn't see, that shouldn't be something that VAR's stepping in on. Like, that's usually for, like, a foul behind the play or, like, the ref thought, you know, he got all ball, but it turns out he actually, like, completely cleaned out the man or something. And I don't think that's really, like, possible on the way that unfolded. But I mean, like, you know, whatever, it's a foul probably. So we're getting kind of technical complaints here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get into it later, but like the referee just like last night was just a complete, I don't know. He had no consistency throughout the match. You know, he handed out six yellow cards in the first half and none in the second half. And what wasn't a foul seemed to change just minute by minute.
Yeah. I mean, we do have to give, like, the refs didn't get their normal preseason, that the refs are not in top shape. This is only the second week back. But, like, Lucas Palazzo is not a good ref.
No, I was going to say, like, you can maybe use that excuse for a few other refs that we'll maybe see. But that, I don't think that's a good one for this guy.
Let's face it, we had five yellow cards in the first half. We had one yellow card in the second half. That was absolutely a red card, and I would not be shocked if Stuver actually does get a midweek upgrade to a red card on that. Like, that was we can talk about that now or later, but like,
yeah, no. I think this is actually like should go into the bucket of VAR reviews too.
A straight red card. I mean, my live comment that's memorialized on Slack was that was straight out of WrestleMania. But like, it was like, no, like, I mean, Stuver knew what he was doing there and he saw that he had a defender behind him. He saw that it wasn't going to be a dog so play there, but he got really lucky that wasn't a red card.
So you're saying, like, I haven't watched it back yet. So you're saying it's a violent conduct red, not a dog so?
Yeah, it's not a dog so red because there is another defender behind him. But that was an NFL-style tackle. Clean NFL-style tackle, but that was still a NFL-style tackle. We weren't playing American football last night.
We were playing American-style football, I guess, but...
Yeah.
That happened right in front of me, and I was like... You know, I think things like this probably should be dog so, but they're never called that way.
Yeah.
I couldn't see, like, the intensity of the hit. It just looked like he shoved him. Like, you see people take a guy down as a quote-unquote professional foul or something. I didn't realize it was quite that bad.
Yeah.
Some of the assumption is also just that, like, when the keeper's outside of the box and fouls somebody, it's going to be a red, and that's not always the case.
But that was harsher. Like, if a field player had that foul, I'd have no issue giving a red to it.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
It was a powerful hit with the intent. There was no intention on going for the ball. It was entirely going for the body.
Well, that's why you don't lead your receivers over the middle.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. any qualms about, or do they have any kind of right to be mad about their second goal being chalked off? I tried to watch it back and, like, you know, we kind of talked about it. Apple doesn't really give you good replays on what happened. Like, if you watch any European broadcast, you'll get like 45 angles of what happened and, you know, detailed slow-mo camera angles, and they don't show you anything. Like, they don't even usually give you a good camera angle live or like from full speed. So like, good offside, bad offside. I have no idea.
Offside.
Okay. Yeah. There are two earthquakes fans behind me who were talking a lot of shit right after that. And it was nice to turn around and wave at them after the game, and they refused to look at me. So
did those Earthquake fans have their hideous jerseys that they were wearing last night?
No, they were in the normal, like, home blue and black.
I was about to say, like, that is a matchup that if I were MLS Czar, would always mandate being Armadillo kit against their blue and black kit. Like, those white kits are the trashiest kits that were introduced this past year in the league.
Yeah, they looked like, I was trying to figure it out at first because I didn't realize they were wearing, like, a throwback. I was like, did they actually release these as a kit? But, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's not like the Vosas kit is anybody's favorite, but the old barcode.
Yeah, interestingly enough, like, I was watching the Apple replays or highlights from the match last night, and they showed the Austin goal that was disallowed. They didn't show that San Jose goal that was disallowed as part of the highlights.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, too, that as part of the highlights, they didn't include Obreon running over to the stands and grabbing his child and then running around the stadium, which is one of my favorite goal sellies I've seen lately. And did he actually get a card for that? Because I thought, like, I saw something about him getting a card for bringing a spectator onto the field or something, but I didn't go back and look at it.
No, he got carded when him and Paul Marie got into it because Marie fouled him and then Obreon kind of retaliated. I saw the talk of, like, him getting fined for that, but I don't know. Yeah, like, it feels weird to, like, fine somebody for bringing their kid onto the field to celebrate a goal. Like, I don't know. That seems weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it got chalked off, too. Like, he probably got punished enough, right?
I mean, I would think so.
Yeah. And, you know, he got his goal later. But I kind of wanted to talk about tactics. And then I watched a little bit more of this game back and realized that basically after the first 25 minutes, there weren't any.
Yes.
Did you guys see anything different or?
No, like, that was, I mean, this is pure chaos ball. This is, like, this is soccer for memes rather than soccer for, like, this is the kind of game that a Euro snob would be like, this is everything that's wrong with MLS. And this is a game that means, it's like, yeah, was the Liverpool-Manchester United game a tactically 19 levels above what we saw last night? Of course it was. But, like, enjoy MLS for what it is. And, yes, do I agree with Steve Cherundolo's comments that, like, MLS needs to get better on players? Absolutely it does. It could start with his own team. But, like, get to the world of, like, yes, you're going to have some games that are pure chaos ball. But, like, there are games in the championship that look just like that where there's no tactics and it's just sheer will to win. And that's okay at times.
Yeah, I love the sheer championship. Will not to lose. I love throwing on the championship and just watching a game that is nothing but vibes and brutalism. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the championship is legitimately fun to watch and a lot of times more fun to watch than Premier League matches. I mean, the biggest problem was just that, like, tactically, like, Austin wasn't set up to deal with counters because they're never set up to deal with counters. And that just kind of, like, established the entire game.
I was going to say we were actually set up worse than most of this year. Like, it's kind of back to the dear God, why is Julio sprinting 75 yards shit?
I mean, it's not even him having to sprint 75 yards. Like, I mean, on the first goal, like, he's just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Did you catch the one with Ring, too, where the ball got, like, passed around three times and then landed at his feet and he didn't realize it was even in play?
Oh, yeah, no, he was off. That's really surprising for Alex Ring to be just, like, off in space like that. But, yeah, I noticed that when that happened. I'm just like, what are we doing? Like,
yeah, so I guess let's do the goals, since there's not a ton to, like, tactically, you know, we tried to push forward and, you know, kind of do our normal thing, and they were set up to play on the counter, and that's about as far as tactically as we can talk. Danny dropping a little deeper and playing between the center backs or as a center back.
I was going to say, Danny, if I haven't seen a full heat map from this game, but if you told me that Danny played on an average deeper position than Julio, I would completely believe you based on what I saw during the live match.
Well, we had both Julio and Heinzeit carrying the ball forward and, you know, slightly exciting, like, oh, cool, we have multiple players that can do this, but also terrifying because you're center backs.
I mean, hey, you know what? We continued our streak of every game that we've scored in this year. We've had a defender score.
That's true. And we had all South Americans, too.
Yes.
There you go.
There's our equalizer for Sheffield.
There you go. Bogle. Nice. Yeah, so I guess let's go through the goals. The first one for San Jose is an utter shit show, and I would literally make them watch that, like, Clockwork Orange style, my entire defense. Because there are about 15 fucking errors on this play. So I'll let you guys pick it apart. Charles, what was your favorite error, the one you find most costly?
I mean, the error to me is always just like, if you're responsible for the back post, you have to be responsible for the man on the back post. And there were two guys back there, and neither of them marked the one player that San Jose had. And that's just something that we see every week. It feels like when Austin gives up a goal, it's just we are not set up to defend the back post in any way. And that just is where all these goals come. And teams know that's where the goals come, and that's what they set up every time. And there's no adjustments.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it as part of like the U.S. goal that they gave against, was it Jamaica in the semifinals of the Nations League? Where yeah. There's just nobody standing back there.
Yep.
And just run a guy back there. If more teams don't pick up on this, we're going to be very lucky.
Yeah, no, like it's one of those things of like, I was thinking to myself as watching that goal, it's like, okay, Matt Hedges hasn't started the last two games. And actually, yeah, well, he got in against Frisco for a little bit there, but it didn't. Now I'm double checking myself. Didn't sub in last night. And like getting to a point of like someone like him who is a more traditional center back, does that make a difference on this goal? And maybe it does, because like he's our best center back at actually, I don't know, blocking shots.
Center backing?
Yeah, center backing, yes. if that is a term, but we're going to call it a term. Like maybe that does, but I think I go back to Charles's point of like we had too many players out of position to do really much of anything. And maybe that stops that, but I don't know if that creates some of the other opportunities we'd have later in the day, so I guess it's a wash.
And we end up with like a little bit of karma on this, but we had like two or three chances to clear that ball. Like Heinzeich like half passes it to San Jose in like a really dangerous spot, and it's all chaos. And I mean, you know, we said we liked chaos at least for last night, so I mean, no.
Did you guys hear Heinz Eich's brief? It was posted on Austin FC Twitter and probably other social media. It's his brief comments after the game.
No.
I'm going to play this for you guys right now because, and I think this will work from my phone on here because it's hilarious.
On a game, class from the forwards. We'll get it figured out defensively, but for now, least knows better. Hey, come on!
When do you hear a team on a hype video to be like, we'll get it figured out defensively?
Yeah. I feel like I've been hearing that for a while.
Like this is not like Phil going up post game or even We Are Austin TV. This is the club promoting, we will get it figured out defensively. That sure doesn't give me much hope that we're going to get it figured out defensively.
No. Like I said, when I met Coach Wolf at the USA game in November or October or whatever it was, like unprompted, he's just like, hey, we'll do better. I was like, okay, man, that the fact that you're saying that without, you know, me asking or anything sort of doesn't fill me with confidence, but
I mean, you know what, like we do not do very much defending of Josh Wolf on this podcast, but I guess I will do a teeny bit of defending him from his preseason comments, like where he was did not seem to be worried about where the goals would come from, where we were all panicked about this. And I think even after scoring four goals last night that I still am panicked about this, because let's face it, we did not have I guess we had one forward score a goal last night. Obreon did score. But still, getting to a point there where it's like, okay, yes, like our defensive problems are very, very real.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure he would say that, like, well, if we open up, we're going to, you know, let ourselves get beaten defensively. But, like, it doesn't have to be colossally dumb shit repeated like that.
Yes.
That's very avoidable. You know, we kind of talked about the second one that gets ruled off.
Go ahead. Sorry, but going back to that point though, like if we sit back, we don't have an attack, and at least this way we have a puncher's chance of winning.
Exactly.
Like, I think that's just like I think that's just like something that Wolf like discounts the idea that like maybe we're just bad defensively, and the only way we're going to win games is just to outscore people.
I could come up with worse approaches to this season than just fuck it, let's go forward. Yeah, like we said, entertaining. And we are up into a 8th play-in game spot now.
Yes, we are. We will probably go down by the time this podcast is released if Portland gets a result against SKC.
Okay. And I mean, it's April, so it's not like it really matters. But
yeah, no, at this point, it is just collect points when you can get them and go from there. And we get to go to St. Louis next week for a rare day game. And it is when I will be there in person next Sunday. And we go from, where they only drew Frisco at home last night, which I admittedly haven't even gotten to see the highlights of that match yet. So I will maybe at some point tonight actually watch the whole MLS wrap-up show, which actually usually pretty good, but I haven't had a chance to do that yet. Too much football this morning,
and we wanted to get this out pretty quick so people could still kind of be buzzing when they listen to it, basking in the win. And I mean, it is 2 wins in a row. We kind of made a slight joke about it, but a philosophical question: is 2 home wins in a row against terrible teams a winning streak?
No, 3 games is a winning streak.
Okay, I'm going to go with yes for Austin.
I don't know, fun fact. When was the last time that Austin won 3 games in a row?
Gotta be 2022.
Yep, it was.
I was thinking it was like June 2022.
It was July 2022. Mm. It was June. It was the 3-game road trip, the crazy 3-game road trip where we went all
Atlanta, Charlotte,
at Colorado, and then at Atlanta.
Yep. That was my guess. I didn't remember what month it was, but I knew it was kind of similar.
And I will double check, but I believe that is the only time we've ever won 3 games in a row in club history, and it's amazing that none of them were at home.
I doubt we did that in 2021, so yeah.
Yeah, just crazy stuff.
Okay, but goal 2.
Yeah, so goal 2 there. Goal 2, we get to another just breakdown on the counter there. And it just gets to a point there where it's like, okay, like they could have – I mean, it felt like they Obosi could have walked in that goal. Stuver does misplay that ball. And, like, you do see him coming over, getting to the point of, like, pointing at him. Like, yes, it was a slightly tough save, but, like, that's a ball that someone – the keeper of Brad – yes, it was a complete defensive lapse. We had only 2 guys back there at that point. I believe it was Danny and Heinz Eich, but we get to a world there where Stuver still should have made that save. And Obosi gets the easy follow through, and it's San Jose 2-0.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm as hard on Stuver on that one. Like, obviously, he's not like perfect on it, and he had some issues. You know, I'm not laying any goal at his feet exactly, but he doesn't take the best angle. But like, that's literally how you would draw up a counterattack if you were teaching like your JV team to do it. And that shouldn't be something that, like, a professional team gets cut open that easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it all starts, like, on the other end of just, like, defenders trying to push up and get the ball and missing it. If you – what's actually really funny about that more than anything is that had Obosi made a front post run instead of just, like – and the ball been played later, there was a San Jose player who would have been back post that just had nobody marking him. And instead, like, Securus made a great play. Like, that's an incredible pass by him.
Yeah.
But again, like, it's a problem that Austin has of just, like, not being able to collect rebounds, not being able to get 50-50 balls, just not being quick enough to be able to, like, capitalize on those. And that's why so many times, like, the goals Austin gives up, like, the only way Stuver gives up goals a lot of times is either through completely open headers on the back post or on rebounds.
Yeah, and he did have some very solid saves off some miscues, both his and other people's. So we're not, you know, calling for Stephen Cleveland or anything. But, yeah, I think he doesn't take the best possible route, I guess, towards saving that pass or saving a shot off the pass. And then for me, that's got to be on the defender to clear it. You know, keeper can scramble and try to get it, but I'm not laying that at his feet. If you can't get there to block the shot, you better be there to clean up the rebound.
Yeah, no, that's fair on that side. But yeah, no one put forward their best performance there on the Austin side. I will say if Amal Pellegrino, who did score the third goal, which we'll get to in a little bit for San Jose, had been in there, And I don't know his match fitness right now because the Norwegian League plays on the same calendar as MLS, so he might still be getting into full shape. But if that guy could have gone 90 minutes, I think San Jose, he could have scored 5 goals for San Jose last night.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, he was dangerous the entire night.
I mean, and he only
played
for, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess 40 minutes because of stoppage time going as long as it did, but still.
Yeah, and we were making fun of him for that miss off the corner, too. And
that whiff was something else, but then he scored and shut us all up.
Yeah, and definitely could have put in at least another one. Yeah, but then we get to do the fun stuff, our goals. So we kind of talked about that. I guess we didn't really talk about the handball shout that much. We just sort of glanced it. I don't know what a handball is, and I feel like this changes league by league, and I don't know the MLS precedent here. It's sort of in that awkward mid zone where it's like away from his body, but it's not like waving his arms around, clearly trying to block a shot. It's sort of a natural position, but it also isn't like even close enough to his body for me. So I'm kind of either way on this one. Charles, any thoughts?
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like I never got like a great replay of it.
Okay.
I just think generally just the way like the ball came off, it just looked like it should be a handball. And I feel as though sometimes that's getting called and sometimes it doesn't. And like the consistency is lacking. Generally I'm for calling more handballs than less. Because I think that like just should be just, I think defenders should be more, should be punished for it more, a way to get the hands out of it, out of defending. But I mean, it made up for, I mean, it was made up for by getting the penalty later. That was iffy.
Yeah, I was going to say we did that kind of last week, too, where everybody's, you know, yelling and shouting for a penalty, and we end up with a goal coming in off a cross. And, you know, not exactly the same thing here, but Brad would have loved this penalty because it's the classic, we're all going to say, I don't know if that's enough for a penalty, and he's going to say, well, it's a foul anywhere else on the field, right?
Yes. You actually should just get the recording of Brad saying that in a previous podcast and just place it right now.
That would take me far longer than I want to do to edit this, but
it's by the letter of the law, it was a handball. By common sense, it's like, okay, wave on. Like the guy, like there's only so much. Yes, his arms very technically extended his body, but they weren't out by more than like 3 inches. Like in my mind, that's a natural position.
Okay, but what'd you think of the penalty? Like, is this one of those like they amount to a penalty between the two of them type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, like the penalty. I mean, Rubio is our best actor we've had since Felipe. Like there is like Rubio did an amazing job of selling that. Like there was contact there.
I was going to say the guy kicked him.
What's that?
The guy kicked him. He gave,
yeah, you know, no, like there was contact there. Like there was, it was a, yes, it was a foul, but like if Rubio didn't do such an over the top job of selling it, but like you have to get to a point of so many times when you're selling it, it doesn't look like, it looks like you're not acting. Rubio did a really good job of acting, but not acting like he was acting, which made that go down.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever, like make the ref make it call.
I recognize the absurdity of these comments, of course, but like the best actors do act when it doesn't look like they're acting.
So he was going through method of acting. The classic school.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense what you said. Like, I think my thing is that like, yes, it's a foul, and yes, it's in the box, but I just don't like seeing penalties called when the player isn't facing goal.
Yeah, I kind of hate that too. But I mean, like, that's the rule, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a penalty by the rules. I just don't have to like it.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, like, you know, maybe there's room for a potential rule change or something there. But yeah, like, top corner of the box, not even facing the goal. You know, there's contact. Is it enough to really bring him down? I don't know. Like, I guarantee you, I watched Anthony Gordon win this penalty for Newcastle, I'd be losing my fucking shit.
I mean, it's also like a comment that like for the defender for San Jose, like that's a stupid foul to make. Like that's a stupid challenge. Like, and there's an argument to be made for punishing that, but at the same time, like, you know penalties are so rare and aren't so important that it is a very harsh punishment.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's one of those where, like, we didn't fully earn a penalty, but they don't really have a right to complain because of how dumb that challenge was, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, Seba steps up, dispatches it pretty quickly. And pretty much all hell breaks loose in the game after that. And it wasn't exactly calm before. And I think that we made the subs right after that, right?
No. Biru. No, if we look at it, that we get to, I'm pulling it back up here. Just Biru sub. Yeah, no.
The okay, other just Biru. Yeah. Yep. All right, that's what I was thinking. I thought two people came on with him, but.
Yeah, no, it was just Biru for Hector. And, like, Hector put in a, I don't know, Hector got, like, that was, where last week we were very much praising Hector's performance. He gets out there. Like, this was more of what you would have assumed from Hector Jimenez if he was in the, what you call it, in case of emergency, shattered glass, Hector Jimenez. That's what we got for the first 60 minutes of that. And Biru definitely deserves to start over that next week in St. Louis.
Yeah, I think we need to do, like, a whole discussion of Biru on his own, but we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, I mean, the second goal's kind of a little bit like their first, where it's just like a bunch of chaos and they can't clear the ball and it sort of falls to Obreon and he just whacks it home.
Yeah, I don't think the San Jose defender saw Obreon.
Okay, I thought he just miskicked it.
Yeah, like it's off a header, and it looks like he's trying to pass it to left where he sees a teammate, mm-hmm. and you can almost see his reaction of like, "Oh, there's an Austin player there."
Yeah, that's a good finish too, though. Put his laces through it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just glad that after the first goal being taken away, the goal last week, that's like, okay, you finally get the score. You do a quadruple check. It's like, okay, yes, like I've gotten the score. He had a nice celebration there. He like gets that monkey off his back, and that's good.
Yeah, and it was only the third best hit of the night. yeah, and I mean, like, these three, like, third one, I think, is, what, 6-7 minutes after the penalty's taken.
Yeah, it was 5 minutes, 3 goals, which is just something. Yeah, like, yeah, it felt more like a hockey game than a soccer game at that point. It's just like, you have the momentum, you keep pressing, and getting to a point of it, that's, I mean, yes, Austin has pulled off similar things in the initial, the team's first ever victory in Colorado. There were 3 goals in about 10 minutes. You go into it. Like, there have been occasional stretches where the team can pull off that type of momentum, but, like, you just look like all vibes at that point. And just getting that first PK, letting that all go in there, it was like, oh, we went from, like, okay, like, what, this match was open enough that I was like, okay, if shots come, like, Yarmo is not that good of a keeper. Their back line is not great. Like, you get shots, you got a chance, got a decent chance of making this happen.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if we could actually like strategize to blitz teams over like a couple 10 or 15 minute periods, great. I don't think we're in a spot to do that, but it's always nice when it does. And I think of the three, the third is the best hit. We talked about Biru coming on. It's kind of just a weird ball that comes across the goal, and he runs around it so he can get the angle on it and just laces it bottom corner. You know, I think Obreon basically just like hit it as hard as he fucking could. Biru's placing this and putting power on it, and that's a very difficult shot to hit. Keeper had no chance. Charles, any thoughts?
No, it was a tremendous hit, and you could tell that he really lined it up. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing to look at,
kind of like the Gallagher one a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. So what's interesting is that if you watch it, he's just like a step quicker than Driussi mm-hmm. to it, because Driussi was doing the exact same thing to set it up on his right foot, and Biru just like yep. slid right in and got it.
Sorry, Capitan. Like,
you just have to wonder that, like, if he missed that, if Driussi would have been like, dude, fucking leave it.
But, like, it's also good to know that we have multiple guys who can hit shots like that. I mean, especially Viru's first goal in the Minnesota match was very much, oh, right place, right time. Look what I found. Where that was like, oh, shit, you have some skills. You still got to work on your running and defending. Like, he's still gets no further. Like, he's not, like, this complete full package yet. But he is there's definitely moments of brilliance there, and I can understand why Roto signed him.
Yeah, I feel like he's a very raw player we plucked out of Brazil or something.
Yeah, no, I think like we've seen like Kolmanich and Lindquist last year try to score like that exact goal and never do it, and so just like having a fullback who can score that just completely changes the dynamics of the attack.
Yeah, and I guess we can talk about Biru here. I don't know what position he was playing. Like, ostensibly, he was playing left back, but, like, half the game, he was pushed up both inside and ahead of Owen. And that was not tactical, because you could see Owen, like, looking at him, like, the fuck are you doing here? And Biru's looking back at him, like, we're going to score some goals, man. Let's do this. Let's have some fun. So I like the swagger.
I mean, I think Biru's best position eventually is going to be playing more of, like, a wing back and, like, more of a back three system.
Yeah.
It seems like that would be the best way to get the most out of him. But you could just, it's funny, like, comparing him to Owen, who just, like, you know, just has this very, like, well, Dad says I have to blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the, like, system that's been ingrained in him since he was, like, six or something. And, like, having another player just, like, do whatever just, like, would never occur to him. Like, it's, it just is really amusing.
You could sort of see his brain break a little bit.
Like, it's like the it's like the kids who like grow up in like very strict households in high school and they go to college and they're like, wait, I can just eat nachos? Like, what?
Yeah. Just a little bit. And you know, we talked a little bit about Hector, and I thought Owen definitely had more of a down game after having a good week last week. Just a little confused, a little slow on the ball, and you know, this isn't new, but I almost felt like he was a little Kirk Cousins-y so far this season, where if you give him time and space, he's really good. But the second you like make him think quickly or put him under pressure, he's starting to get like really jittery.
So who in this system do you bring in to replace Owen next week with?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, like,
no matter what we're doing, Riggles played 0 minutes the past 2 weeks. We got 2 wins. We got to keep that up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you sort of have Finley play in that spot. Because what Owen was really doing was sort of being like a left midfielder of sorts. Is that a fair description of what he actually did?
I mean, we said it earlier. Yeah. It's not like there were real tactics in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of reminiscent of like what was very in vogue like in the Premier League like 15 years ago of like the left back overlaps and then the left mid, who normally would make up that wide space, tucks in more.
Yep.
But that also just like that's also just like not really also what was happening. Like Owen was just kind of like going to where he felt like he was supposed to be at, and Biru just kind of like ran past him.
Yeah, and like this entire like fuck chaos match is going on around him and he's just trying to stick to his spot.
Yes.
But yeah, that's actually a pretty good description. I didn't quite piece that together, but yeah, I don't know. It was a very interesting game for a lot of people. Unfortunately, we did that thing that we love doing where we come from behind and then we give up a tying goal. This is another gigantic defensive fucking lapse. Seth, you want to take us away on this one?
Yeah. I mean, I just get to the point there where I feel like three different guys for San Jose could have scored that all with time in the box there. Just a complete, like, just cluster on the ball there. Like, I don't know how else to describe that. It was just like the second, I mean, there was like, I mean, yes, you cannot be, they had guys ahead of us. We were so far forward there that no one was within about 15 yards of midfield, of the midfield line on our own side to start that. So like San Jose was able to get out in front because you can't be called for offside in your own half. And yep, they were just on a full-on breakaway at that point. And, yeah, we weren't going to be able to catch him up. I mean, we got to a point there where Danny tried his best on the run back, but there was just not enough space there like for us to go to come back, and San Jose deserved that equalizer.
Yeah, and a very tidy finish. So whenever I kind of complain about our strikers doing any number of things, and I'm like, just pass the ball into the back of the net, that's exactly what this finish is. Just nice, cushioned, into the corner, easy pass, curl it a little bit. You don't have to, you know, hit it to fucking Mars. Like, just put it where the keeper can't get it and on frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, a little bit of a compliment there. And, yeah, you said that he's a recent signing for San Jose?
Yeah, so Pellegrino came over from Bodo Glimt. He is one of the, I think, maybe the all-time leading goal scorer in Norwegian domestic history. Like, the guy is a goal machine. If you pull up,
yeah, he has 49 goals in the last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, if you pull up there, yeah. Yeah, 24 goals last year, 25 goals. 2020, he was injured a bunch in the 2021 season. 25 goals in 2020, 20 goals in 2017. He had, even when coming up there, 17 goals. Like, I mean, this guy is a – I mean, he's 33. I mean, the only problem is that he's a Norwegian national, and he has a couple other guys ahead of him and that hasn't ever gotten national team call-ups because of some of the talent ahead of him. But, ooh. He is a target striker there.
Okay, yeah.
Are you saying that you...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that you wouldn't start him over Haaland?
Yes, I am saying that.
It's close. Yeah, Arsenal had Bodo Glimt in group stage of the Europa League last year, so I probably saw him play and didn't put that together. Yeah, good finish, bad defense, bad a lot of things. And then, you know, I sort of said the game was already crazy and then it all hell broke loose and then the game got even crazier and all hell broke loose. And we have that Stuver moment where he shoves a guy over and I think both teams have some good whacks at the goal. Stuver has a good save. Like going into, let's say, 85th minute, were you feeling more, holy shit, we're going to fuck this up or we're going to win this game? Because as soon as they scored that that tying goal, I was like, there's no way in hell this game ends without another goal.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with you. I was like, this game is going to be 4-3. I just don't know who's going to score, and I'd do 50-50 either way.
Yeah, Charles.
Especially having seen the Chelsea Man U game on Thursday, being like, yeah, this game has seven goals written all over it. At least it wasn't quite like that, but it was still like, whew.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, Seth, how dare you?
Hey, you guys got a point against us today. Like, I got to bring you down a little bit more.
That's fair. That's fair. I felt like the match definitely had another goal in it, but also that San Jose seemed more and more content with getting a point as the game wore on. Like you could just kind of tell that they just kept kind of retreating a little bit more and more, especially after the Stuver play. I felt like most of the extra time was just kind of spent like with Austin attacking. So I was expecting a goal to happen, and then it just kind of became more and more likely that it was only Austin who were really trying to get one.
Yeah, and we actually had a pretty good chance. I don't remember who hits it in like 94, maybe. And, you know, screws it wide. I think it's Owen, actually. You know, not like a how dare you not score here, but like, oh, it's a pretty good chance. I don't know if we're going to get a better one. And, you know, like decent shot. It's only a little wide, but then the magic happens. The king is back. Yeah, I don't know how to describe this really other than like, we put it forward. I didn't notice that the ball coming back to Driussi is actually like an amazing assist from Zardes live.
Yes, it's an amazing assist from Zardes.
I thought it just like sort of came out and he hit it. But that is cushioned and intentional and points to him.
You know what? Giassi Zardes had a first time assist that won Austin FC a game. But just note that sentence recorded in human history.
Yeah. No, like... he's clearly very limited at this point in his career. If he can do that every now and then, fucking great.
Yeah, no, so that part is awesome. I think we do have to recognize that we scored a goal in plus 11 of a 10-minute stoppage time that was already a long stoppage time there, where San Jose, in that stoppage time, takes forever to conduct their sub. I mean, it was close to 90 seconds from when the whistle was blown. And it got to the point where we had the second most iconic Julio Cascante moment versus San Jose in our history. The first one being the infamous roll over the side of the 2021 4-3 loss collapse. But Julio tried to physically push the players to the line for us to get resume play faster. I mean, it will end up being another iconic moment in this Austin versus San Jose rivalry.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a great rivalry, especially if we're both kind of like at the bottom of the table. This has probably got to be one of the better games to circle on your calendar every year going forward.
I mean, I've never seen a rivalry where we have like almost no interaction with their fans. Like it is nothing like there are no characters involved in this. This is 100% on the pitch rivalry. It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I just lost my shit, but Charles, how did you react?
Same. Yeah. It was like it just like you just kind of like lose track of like what's going on for a few seconds while like everybody's just celebrating and you know the lights go green and you're just kind of like you're just so caught up in the moment and the emotion of it that you just kind of stop processing like what's going on around you.
Yeah, Seth, how was it watching?
It was Well, I will say I had it partly spoiled for me because a friend of the pod, Arias Silvis, posted the goal right in Slack before, because Apple TV runs on a 30 to 45 second delay, and I have it up on the second screen there. And I was just like, maybe he's just posted the game is over. I'm just going to turn this away, throw my phone on the couch. And I'm like, okay, I 95% know what's coming here. And yeah, I was like, I didn't expect it to come quite like that, but like, players like Seba need to step up in those moments, and he did, and it was fucking beautiful.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a nice hit. I don't think the keeper has a chance. And when I got done high-fiving everybody in my section, I did look back at my Wanker San Jose friends, and I overheard a conversation of theirs that went a little something like this.
Oh, I don't want to do this anymore!
It's fun. So I'm glad they got to experience pure suffering. If I think Riley tweeted this from the SFJ account, but if a game were to encapsulate everything this podcast is about, that was it.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say about the goal other than like it's a great goal, because I feel like those sorts of things, you're like, well, I can try to put some great vocabulary and paint this lovely Peter Drury word picture, but like, just go watch the fucking goal. It's amazing. Especially if you were in the stadium and you were like, oh my God, we blew it again. And Captain Fantastic pops up and just, you know, everybody's happy and everything's decent in Verde land for right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's your homework. If you're listening to this, go watch that goal again. Tweet at us how you felt if you want to. Any crazy celebrations you had. Make any, you know, new friends, hugging strangers, all that good stuff. We always love to hear about it.
I'm going to take us on a tangent here for a second, but I don't know if either of you guys read a absolutely, I don't think it's quite at this level moment, but an absolutely hilarious piece in The Athletic this past week about moments of ecstasy and do they lead to more kids being born 9 months later.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. Like, I didn't read this piece, but I've heard that before.
But like, I mean, because there was it recently passed the moment of 9 months after Wrexham's huge win over Notts County last year. And the hospital tweeted out that there was like a 50% surge in births in that week. And I mean, it was more just random coincidence of things. There's all sorts of science. There's way too much scientific research into this of whether more kids are born after major sporting events. And the answer is almost always no. It's completely within random variation. But people can believe what they want.
Well, and I mean, the amount of confounding factors there is going to make it impossible to actually like prove any sort of causation. I think I remember hearing about this with the like Michael Phelps 8 gold medals, and he won like the 6th or the 8th one by like 1/10,000th of a second or something like that.
Yeah.
On one of the relays. And I think that's the first time I heard about that. And I was like, that's fucking stupid. But, you know. Charles, you want to talk about Luka Shpala?
I mean, I guess.
Since we have to.
I've never seen a bench get carded 11 minutes in. I thought it was kind of interesting that it looked like he kind of, like the San Jose coach, Lucci, kind of sent his assistant up to coach from the box for the rest of the match for a lot of it, just to like be wary of it, which I thought was kind of an interesting like wrinkle.
I'm going
to
get sent off. I'm going to do self-restraint.
Yeah, like I wasn't sure if it was that or if it was like, okay, I'm gonna pace myself, like I'm gonna go really hard like the last 15 minutes.
Yeah,
and so I need to like slow down now. I thought he was bad. I thought he didn't do a good job of maintaining what was and wasn't a foul. I thought he was too card happy early and not carding enough late. You know, it's kind of his reputation, like he is just a card happy official, and so that kind of added to just like the general chaos of the team's playing.
Yeah, and we said too before that the biggest difference we noticed between the replacement refs and the typical union guys is that like the union guys, like even if they fuck up calls, like they sort of have the game under control, and I didn't feel like that at all on that game. Like it definitely felt kind of like those earlier games that where it's like, oh shit, a fight might break out. And kind of did a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the chances of just, like, O'Brien getting into a fight this season, I feel, are pretty high.
Hey, we wanted entertainment.
Yeah. I mean...
So. I was about to say, we now have I hate stereotyping here, but we have our two feistiest players on this team are both Colombians, and if you've ever watched any Colombian domestic soccer, it makes complete sense.
Yeah. I don't usually.
I don't watch much of it, but I have seen a little bit here, and I will say that I feel like there is sort of a – it's not – like if you were to put on an XY chart of like – soccer skill versus passion, there is usually the most passionate fan bases, whether in Eastern Europe or in South America. The actual quality of soccer doesn't seem to be that great. And maybe it's like, okay, Austin FC is not one of the best soccer watching experiences in MLS. I think all three of us will openly recognize that. But yeah, like the passion up there is definitely top quartile. And it's just like getting to a point of, okay, where can we actually watch good football that is also passionate in the stands and everything else? But I don't know. That's a lifetime search.
Yeah, I think that's going to be changing too, year to year. Yeah, I don't know. I like a little, you know, we keep talking about we need leaders and we need spice. Like we need a Gabrielson, we need a Felipe. Like, you know, maybe we have leaders. I think that's still going to like take time to shake out. But we got some spice with Rubio and with Obreon, and you know, we say roughly we got four goals. Argentine gets two, Colombian gets one, Brazilian gets one, and the penalties won by a Chilean. We got some South American flavor here.
Yeah.
So no complaints from me there. I don't have anything to add on Shpala. He was bad. We get bad MLS refs. We talked about the VAR stuff.
Yeah.
Move on with our lives.
Yep.
You guys want to do the fun format stuff?
Sure.
All right. I actually didn't think about these ahead of time. I did this sort of our friend Phil West was seen in the stands rewriting his article at full time due to the late goal. And so that's sort of how my I usually think about these things during the game. That's sort of how mine went. Seth, you want to lead us off with Stock Rising?
Stock Rising, we'll do our inaugural goal scorer, Adar Obreon. We've talked about him a lot on this pod already, but he is showing that he, especially with how Frisco's looking, he probably be getting a lot of starting minutes in North Texas as well at this moment. So I'm glad that he's getting starting minutes here in Central Texas. And yes, it is sad that a player from the re-entry draft is outperforming a non-tammable designated player, but like if the non-tammable designated player isn't adding any value to the team and the team is winning, like you gotta keep him up at that point. So definitely Obreon stock rising and hopefully continues to rise.
Yeah, and I think what, you know, people notice the goal, what'll maybe go a little more unnoticed in this game from him is we said a lot like, hey, you know, he's fast as the fucking wind, but he can't control the ball to save his life, the kid from Miami in D2 the Mighty Ducks a little bit. But no, he was actually really good on the ball, like control wise and passing and making better decisions and actually affecting them. I thought, oh, holy shit, Diaz. Ben Brederton Diaz just like absolutely destroyed Trevor Chalobah from behind. I think like obviously you get the headline goal, two goals if you want to count the one chalked off, but every aspect of his game I thought was better too. Charles, anything you want to add or go ahead and do yours?
My stock rising is going to be Rodolfo Borrell signings. You know, we're including Heinz Ek and Biru and Obreon, you know, and Rubio. Like, those have all been guys who have been very good contributors already and have really, like, already, for the most part, made themselves starters except for Biru, and that seems to be more of a fitness thing than anything else. So it's kind of like a thing to be optimistic about, is just like having like a competent sporting director helps be better on the field. And I mean, I'm glad that we figured that out eventually.
Yeah. I think those were going to be my two major ones. Biru entertainment factor, I guess I'm going to go for mine. Just cause he looks like he wants to get forward and make things happen. And, you know, there are some teams where it's like, hey, can you like actually like do your job? I think this is the team that you definitely need the guy to sort of just like come in and be like the fun, you know, fuck it, let's go ahead and mess around and actually play this game and have a little bit of fucking fun with it again. Guy, and it looks like he's sort of unlocking some stuff. And yeah, you know, he has some fitness issues. And yeah, that was close. You know, maybe isn't the most defensively responsible player in the world, but he has, you know, some good offensive instincts, and he's, you know, always looking to get forward. So maybe not necessarily him as a player, but his impact or his entertainment value, I guess, we'll call his stock rising. Stock falling, Charles, you want to go first?
Sure. I think my stock falling is Julio Cascante, who I thought had a really poor match. You know, normally he's able to kind of affect on set pieces and on long throws, and he wasn't able to do that. And he was also pushing up and not able to defend. You know, he needs to either add goals or prevent goals, and he kind of did neither yesterday.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm kind of hard on Julio a lot of the time, and I, you know, we've said this to death, like part of it is the way he's played I don't think suits him, but that was the first bad game I think he's had this year. There have been some like okay, but first like actively bad one. Seth, how about you?
So I'll just add on to the Julio point. Once Leo Vicedin is back healthy, I want to see Julio start a striker for a game. I just want to see what it would be like if he didn't have to actively run back and could play the position of his heart's content just for one game. Maybe Leagues Cup would be a really good time to do it, because I don't really care what happens in Leagues Cup, but I want to see that experiment happen.
Just yeah, give him 45 there in Leagues Cup. Who cares?
Yeah, but like you, I don't know, just run out all sorts of experiments, because I want to see that experiment happen. Yeah. My stock falling, there's a few ways that I could go with this at this point, but it is a I'm actually going to do a off-the-field one. It is going to be the very loud audible peach chant that was heard in the stadium.
Ah.
We have not done that, because it is – that was – okay, that second half had anything you could want for it in an MLS match. We had 6 goals in that second half. We had tons of shots. I mean, plenty of them weren't on target, but we had nonstop action. You had almost everything you could want in that second half of soccer. And you get to a point, and you had at least a couple dozen, and obviously I'm only on TV. I wasn't in the stadium last night. But it was loud and audible that you could hear that chant. And I know that the good folks at Oak Front and others have done, others have identified some of the main people who were doing it. But, like, of all matches to do it, like, it'd be one thing if we were down 4 or 5 nil or something, which we could have been at this point in that match last night. But
you should have been grateful, you fucks.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's like, of all matches to do it, like, what the fuck are you thinking? And, I mean, luckily people have been identified. Hopefully they are banned from the stadium and the league for at least a year. Get that shit out of Q2. We don't need that. Stop it.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't in the supporter section. I don't know how this fully works, but I usually get the impression that's people who are kind of like touristy or, you know, wouldn't it be fun to go to our first ever game type of thing? Like, it's there's usually not your regulars. Also,
the people who were identified were in jerseys, were a couple of them have been semi-active members of Los Verdes who know better.
Okay. Yeah, we'll let the process
I'm not on the membership committee of that organization. I don't want to be on it. And there's going to be all sorts of consequences. But I will say people worked with the front office to identify it, stomp it out. But, like, just a constant reminder. And I assume the folks listening to this are more aware of it. But it's just, like, don't do dumb shit. Like, it's one thing if the players are doing dumb shit on the field. But, like, this is shit we can't control.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I'm not going to excuse it either way, but, like, it's a little more understandable if you're getting thrashed or something and you're like, this fucking sucks, not, wow, this is a really fun game. So, yeah, that's a good shout. I'm going to go probably piss a few people off and say John Gallagher. I think this is the second or third game in a row where he's been lax, both defensively and offensively. He's given the ball away. You know, he's still very fast and tracks back, but and he's good on long throws. But, you know, we saw a lot of spark and offensive creativity last year while maintaining defensive solidity on both sides of playing fullback. And he just looks like he's sort of drifting a little bit right now. And, you know, I don't know if I'm worried about him or anything, but he's sort of in a bad patch right now. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that. We could have basically picked the entire defense. But
yeah, no, or Owen or anyone else there, but I wanted to give him some time off on this one.
Yeah, I already ragged on Owen earlier, so we'll call him like a soft half stock rising or stock falling. But Charles?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with your general point about it. I think that Gallagher is both our best defensive fullback and also tends to have difficulty with the better wingers. I mean, that's kind of why the lineup got switched this week as compared to last week, was to try to match him up a little bit more in Espinoza. But, you know, we've seen it against, you know, Paul Ariola at times, and even other wingers have just, you know, Gallagher just can't hang with those guys. And it really has a lot of difficulty with it. It needs help in a way that, like, you know, for somebody who was named an All-Star last year for goal scoring as a fullback, which is always, you know, a gripe about All-Star selections. But still, like, that is a problem that Austin has, is they are not strong enough defensively on the wings and on the edges.
Yeah, and that All-Star selection too is, you know, people are bad at selecting All-Stars. Like, I'm glad he got it. But a lot of it was like goal scoring in the beginning of the season when we were playing him as a wing back and a back three, back five, and not this kind of like base four that we've been playing this year too. So, I mean, part of it's just, you know, he's playing a different position, but cool. Moment of suffering time. I'm going to go first, and it's when the game is 3-3. I'm going to say it's like 91st minute, and Jossie is running across the box, and Owen tries to slip in a ball behind to Zardes, who would literally have to be twice as fast as he is to have any fucking shot at all to get to that ball. And it was just a level of like laziness of, you know, look, I'm trying to do something, but like there's a, you have to know something that impossible isn't going to happen. And it just sort of felt like maybe Owen gave up on the game a little bit and just talked about it a little bit. Just, look, no, I'm doing what the system says. I did the thing. And those sorts of things, especially in a really like tough as nails, crazy chaos, 3-3 game, 90th minute, you know, make something happen. Like, I don't know. It made me feel like there was no way in hell we were going to win that game and that they were going to come down the other end and score. But obviously that didn't turn out true. So yeah, my suffering was elated, I guess, or allayed. Yeah. Charles, you want to go next, or do you guys want to talk about that moment or at all?
No. There's nothing more that needs to be said.
Yeah.
That's kind of the extent of it. So my moment of suffering was watching Jahdaire O'Brien score. The Verde lights come on. He goes over and celebrates as a child, a beautiful moment that they could have cherished forever, that, you know, you could have had the video and, you know, been like a like lifelong memory. And instead, VAR decides to overturn it based on a foul. You know, we talk a lot about how evil VAR is, and this is another case of how, like,
no, VAR hates joy.
Shouldn't matter. Yeah, VAR hates joy. You know, it reminds me of when Ahmad for United scored against Liverpool and celebrated by taking his jersey off and got sent off. Some things are more important than the rules. And this is one of those cases where it was more important than the rules. And yeah, this is part of why, like, we should be against VAR is because it's evil.
Yeah, and you always have to.
I will remind you the next time VAR saves our asses that you think VAR is evil.
No, I agree. And it wasn't like, for those of you who haven't seen this clip yet, because I watched it back, it's not like he runs over and like picks up his kid and is like, yay, kid. He like literally grabs his kid, like brings her onto the field and starts like running around with her with his kid in his arms.
Yeah, like it's an absolutely like 50 beautiful yards. Moment.
It's not like, oh, look, I did the thing. It's like,
well, and then I felt like his second celebration was just like dancing with the substitutes, which was fun. But like, I really wanted to watch him run across the field and celebrate with his kid again.
Yeah. I wonder if he didn't do that because he was on a yellow.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the first one was pure, absolutely unfiltered joy. And, you know, especially for that soft of like a VAR overturn. It's not like he was 30 yards offside. Like, yeah, let it go.
No, he wasn't offside at all. That was a foul.
Yeah, I know. I was saying, like, as an example, if he was 30 yards offside, fine, call it. But
yeah,
it wasn't something like that. Seth, how about you?
I'm just going to – I was going back and forth between the second and third San Jose goals of seeing which one was more deflating. But actually, since we scored so soon after the second one, I feel like we actually got more energized by it. But just seeing how much open space there was on that third goal, and I know we've already talked about it, but it was just like really like we are giving this much space up. Like we didn't decide – like we – like, on the one hand, I appreciate that we did not park the bus up a goal, especially against San Jose, because I don't think we could have done that successfully. But, like, there's a clear margin between parking the bus and not having anyone within 15 yards of the midfield line.
No, it was all vibes, no tactics for almost the entire game.
And just like really,
and it got worse as the game went on.
And it was like, oh crap, we got this to 3-3. They could easily do this again, and we'd lose 4-3. And that, as deflating as the 4-3 loss to them at home was in 2021, I think that this would have been even more deflating than that.
Yeah, I don't know. That one was pretty bad.
That one, but like that one was late enough in the season that we had no hope of making the playoffs at that point. Where this one was like, oh, like it's still early in the season. We still have hope. We just have to stay afloat and then just have enough points so when our big savings come in, big signings come in and save us, that we can get through to 7th through 9th place and then anything can happen.
I didn't realize your internal soccer monologue was so high pitched, but.
No, I didn't realize it either, but life is life.
We're all learning things about ourselves this season. And really, that's the true journey. Seth, you mentioned this earlier. We're away to City. Day game, energy drink soccer. Got kind of smacked around there last year. You know, would you kind of go same or similar lineup? Maybe look at replacing Hector and just see what happens? Or do you think we're going to try to tactics our way through this and make some adjustments?
I mean, I would definitely, okay, if you're going to be playing against such a high press that St. Louis runs, like, Hector cannot start this match. Like, that is, yeah, if Hector, you need him for a few minutes at the end, sure, Biru can't go 90, okay, but I'm definitely starting Biru. I definitely am starting Ethan Finley at this point. I think Owen would actually be a pretty good tactical sub around, like, 60th minute or so of a match like this, but otherwise I think I would stick with the same 11. Obviously there is a chance that Stuver's yellow is upgraded to a red and Stephen Cleveland is starting. Stuver played the single worst game of his career at that stadium last year, so I don't know if that would motivate him to want to play to get a revenge clean sheet or just be like, I never want to see that place again in my life.
I would think he's more revenge clean sheet, but
yeah.
Yeah, Charles, any thoughts here?
I think it'll be a little bit interesting because when we played City before, Juicy didn't start. I'm not sure.
He played like 10, 20 minutes or something.
Yeah. He got featured at the end. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to have him. You know, he's playing so well right now that really does make a difference.
Juicy didn't play at all against St. Louis at home.
Okay. It was the game after that he got like 10, 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure about that looking back at like the lineups. So I think that'll help. And I think just having like a little bit more like, because I felt like last year that was the first match after League's Cup.
It was.
And after being off for so long, like it looked like Austin just like kind of forgot how to play in those 3 weeks. So hopefully now that they're like having a little more confidence after 2 wins, like they'll just be able to play better despite our general record.
Just do gooder, boys.
Playing, yeah. I mean, just by like the general record of like of Austin on the road. Since you know this season, like as much as we have like been disappointed in the results, like they've gotten points in 5 out of their 7 matches so far.
Yeah, but we've been kind of home slanted. I mean, I guess we did go on the road and get a point at Seattle, but they just got their first win last night. So, yeah, we'll
yeah. I mean, Austin's been playing against like some of the other bad teams in the West and like getting some results, which is better than not getting results. I mean, we could be San Jose and be down at the bottom.
Yep.
But I don't know, like hopefully just with like getting Drewcy back healthy and like a little more confidence, like we can just be like the vibes team like we were in 2022.
Yeah, and at this point I'd take vibes team.
Yeah.
No, vibes works. I mean, we haven't. The last time we won a game on the road was July 8th of last year at Minnesota, and that was one of the vibiest wins I've ever seen. We lost XG in a match that we won 4-1. But we actually won XG in a 6-3 loss at St. Louis last year. But that was a truly, truly, truly miserable match. And I mean, it's supposed to be lovely next Sunday in St. Louis, so it will not have a heat index of anything like that. So it will hopefully be breathable as we will be. There's only 7 of us going, so we'll be in the very top row with no flags or banners. But I will say, to shit talk the St. Louis front office, I will at least nice talk them that they still allowed us to buy tickets for $35 each, but they are reselling those tickets for $96 right now.
Oh.
I guess. Capitalism, but like, ooh.
Yeah, we got first crack at him, I guess.
We did, but like, that's something to be like, okay, like, we're going to go resell away tickets for $96.
Yeah, impressive. Wasn't a bunch of the XG in that game, too, like, because there were five goals after the 80th minute or something?
Yeah.
Like, the game was over, and then just, like, people were cracking them in?
Yes.
Okay.
Everyone, it was, in like, the heat index, even at, like, 11 p.m., was still, like, 110 or something. It was
home sweet home.
Yeah, also, the Minnesota road win, Austin won XG. They lost XG on the home win.
Okay, they did, okay. But it was, still a very vibey match, if I remember.
Yeah, it's still very, yeah. I mean, Rigoni scored.
Yeah.
The ultimate vibes.
I feel like we didn't get any, like, long-term answers out of this game, but it was a lot of fun, and we won, so I don't know why we need to, like, we don't need to bother with it.
Yeah. But it's a question of like, okay, what can this team do to actually, we won three games on the road last year. And it's a question of this team hasn't scored on the road since the decision day game at San Jose last year. Hopefully we can carry over some of this momentum from the second half, but I'll be pleasantly surprised if we have a goal at halftime against Energy Drink Soccer.
All right. Anything else you guys want to cover before we get out of here? No? Cool. All right. Well, support the Laundry Project. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Suffering Pod. And on behalf of Seth, Charles, and wherever the hell Brad is, thanks for suffering with us. Bye.
Promise here for Austin Jarrett Stroud. It's Diego for goodness! He has written his name into Austin folklore.
They just won't go away.
Oh, he hits the upright again! That's impossible!
The Bears' season's going to end on a double doink.
Altidore squares it. Dempsey's missed it. Donovan has it. From hope, there is glory.